This is the Lunch Bite with Ian Bass.
It's just gone. 18 minutes to the hour of 1 o'clock. You're listening to Ian Bass on the Lunch Bite on the 4th of March. Hard to believe we're already in March, and hard to believe that the budget speech is a week past us and life has carried on and everything seems normal. Well, let's see how normal life really is. I'm delighted to be joined by a very good friend of mine as well, and somebody who is somebody who really breaks down things and makes them simple. I want to thank Daniel as well for coming out of a presentation. He was just doing a presentation, and he kindly jumped out of that presentation so that he could chat to us. Good afternoon, Daniel. How are you doing?
Good afternoon. Yeah, good, thanks.
Yeah, all good, thanks. So, yeah, Daniel, besides the fact that you're an equity analyst at 361 Asset Management and someone that's really lived through many ups and downs, you were there before the global financial crisis. I also understand that you have an interest or a hobby in building furniture. Tell us a little bit about that hobby first, and then we'll get into the nitty-gritty. Where's your fascination with furniture come in?
So I'd say it's more from a more artistic background. Wow. And it's just an appreciation for fabrics and color. So,
okay.
To be honest, it's got nothing to do it doesn't have to do with building, but more just finding and placing just interesting pieces of furniture.
All right, great. Well, that's awesome. And I'd like to link that back, because sometimes looking at these markets and looking at the budgets, it can be quite creative. So you and I were chatting earlier in the week, and you were telling me that, yeah, the budget could have been worse. And then you spewed a whole lot of other stuff to me about how bad it was. So if we looked at it before we get into how bad it was, can you pull out like one or two things that really look positive or optimistic? And some things, as layman people living in South Africa, what can we see as nuggets, if I can call it that?
So when I said it could have been worse, I guess you could say that that they could have done nothing. You know,
yeah.
So there is apparently some commitment to reduce the wage bill.
Sure.
Not necessarily by cutting it directly, but by growing it slower than it otherwise would have been grown.
Yeah.
A cut would have been a lot better, but if you're looking for some sort of positive side to that, I'd say they could have said, we're not doing anything with the wage bill.
Yeah, absolutely. So weighing in on that. Sorry to interrupt. We've actually just got a listener who's written in. So, thanks, Alicia, for sending this in. Tell us, how do you think, just talking about the wage bill, how do you think the wage negotiations will go? And Alicia's added to that, where is the biggest execution risk of implementing the budget? So perhaps start with the wage bill first, and then we can touch on Alicia's second question after.
Okay, so how are the discussions going to go?
Mm-hmm.
Look, I think anybody who's been living here and followed any of the news knows that these wage negotiations don't go very well.
Right.
So I think that the government has their work cut out for them.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of execution risk, I think that a lot of the savings, in inverted commas, that they are postulating are back-end loaded. So
right.
Coming at the end of 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot easier to tell you I'm going to do something and most of it will be done in 3 years versus I'm going to do something and it'll be done in the next 6 months, because you can't really judge me on that until 3 years have passed. And then maybe by the time 3 years have passed, things are very different. Maybe they're worse. Maybe it's too late.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that these kind of like wage deals or wage negotiations that are protracted out to 3 years are actually quite dangerous in a way, because circumstances change significantly in a very short period of time, and these are commitments that the government have made to I would say government employees, and now they're basically saying they can't honor them.
So look, I think it's quite multifaceted. You know, possibly what they'll be doing, I mean, I'm just thinking now, possibly
sure.
What they'll be doing is they'll be honoring the commitment going out another year, but just not replacing people who leave.
Okay.
So if you give an inflationary increase of, let's say, 7%, and there's 2-3% natural attrition, you're left with, you know, your 4-5% growth, which is lower than the 7-8% growth that you thought you were going to have before, and that's your saving, once again, in inverted commas. But the 3-year risk I'm talking about is not necessarily linked to what wage bill they might negotiate now. It's more to the fact that my understanding of the budget savings were going to be backloaded. So however those savings come about, there's a message that a lot of them will be realized 3 years from now.
Right.
And like I said, it's a lot harder to hold someone to task for something that they say they're going to do in 3 years versus mm-hmm. what they say they're going to do in the next 6 months to 1 year.
And I think that's what, us as South Africans and the, I guess the wider or the broader population are saying we want to see action now. We want to see, definitive steps that are going to make a difference now and not 3 years from now. So on the back of that and perhaps just linking it to an additional question here is that where are the opportunities? Where do you see the immediate opportunities now? And perhaps not linked directly to the budget, but just as South Africans, what can we learn maybe from the budget or from what government has done over the last few years that as individuals we can make sure we don't make the same mistakes?
I mean, I'd say possibly, you know, one of the main things, and if you want to link it back to individuals is, you know, don't take out debt for non-productive things.
Right.
So if you are going to take on debt, make sure that your returns on that are sufficient to cover that debt in the medium to long term. Otherwise, what you're ultimately left with is something that's not producing and the debt to pay back, which doesn't leave you in a fantastic position.
And that's pretty much where our government is at the moment, is that we actually have an increasing debt situation where it's kind of like going to, as one of the market commentators quoted, it's to infinity and beyond.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
because the revision from the previous budget was, I think the number was 55% of GDP. Now it's the projection 3 years out has gone up to 70%, and that's projection could be more. So.
Yeah.
Look, debt in and of itself is not necessarily a terrible thing. A lot of growing and emerging economies do have higher debt. But like I said, all the difference comes in where the debt goes. If the debt goes into things that actually produce something in the medium to long term and more than covers the debt, that's how you grow.
Yeah.
If it's the reverse, that's how you find yourself in a bit of a trap.
Sure. So the message I'm hearing clearly is that if you are going to look at having to borrow or looking at having to incur debt, make sure that you're doing it for the right reasons and that there's tangible upside that you will get from that. And that's, as you say, a very important lesson that each one of us can learn from. Daniel, tell me in the context of the overall picture, you know, everybody talks about like Moody's and S&P and Fitch, like, these are guys that are, well, they're guys and girls. I shouldn't just say guys, but they're a bunch of people that kind of come in and they look at, South Africa and they look at what's happening and they look at the budget speech and they look at this and then they kind of go and tell the rest of the world, okay, well, this is what South Africa, this is what we feel about South Africa. Many people discount that as irrelevant, but can you just very quickly tell us how important are the rating agencies and why should we care what they think of our economy?
Well, look, a simple reason is that, you know, there are global bond funds out there with a lot of capital and part of their mandate, which is how they need to, which make up the rules of how they need to invest, say that you can only invest in a country's debt that has an investment grade rating.
Right.
So very simply, if we lose that, it's not even a question of analysis. It's a question of rules. These funds have to say, right, South Africa is not investment grade anymore. So it's not part of our investable universe. We have to pull the cash.
Okay. So basically, as I'm understanding that from you, you're saying that we could have awesome companies here in South Africa that are performing brilliantly and everything is going hunky-dory at a micro level. But just because the country is at a macro level is downgraded or rated lower, that would preclude some of our companies or investors coming in because the country rating is negative, yet the underlying companies in South Africa might not be so bad. Is that correct?
Yeah, so the rating might not necessarily correlate to, you know, how negative it is. Maybe certain companies are not as negative as the rating would imply.
Yeah.
But simply by the rules of investing of some of these funds, you know, it's very cut and dry. You know, this country or this bond needs to have this rating, and if it doesn't, we can't invest there.
Great. All right, Daniel, we're going to come back just after these ads to talk about Woolworths. So, just give it some thought in terms of the incentive package that the new CEO is being offered. We'll be back right after this.
This is the Lunch Bite with Ian Bass.
Welcome back. It's just gone 8 minutes to the hour of 1 o'clock. We're talking to Daniel Isaacs, but before we get back to Daniel, let me tell you about this. Introducing another innovation from Dis-Chem Dis-Chem's clinic services, Care Connect. With Care Connect, your first stop is a clinic sister who will complete a health assessment and professional consultation. Should you need a doctor, your nurse can provide a video consultation with a Dis-Chem Care Connect doctor. The doctor can renew your repeat or provide a prescription, supply any referral letter or sick note needed. You can get your meds there and then. Care Connect, only from Dis-Chem, pharmacists who care. Daniel, coming back to our discussion around individual companies, and as I mentioned just before the break, Woolworths have appointed a new CEO, a gentleman by the name of Roy Bagattini. He comes from Levi Strauss, a very well-known brand. He's just taken up this job in February, and I was reading that he's been granted 1.4 million shares, and they're under the group's the group's retention share plan or share scheme plan, and the total transaction value is around about 54 million. Tell me, Daniel, just before we get into the discussion about is this good for Woolworths, can you just explain how does a share retention plan work, and why do companies or boards typically use this as an incentive for CEOs coming in or executives?
Okay, so I'm just going to say, so I'm going to say very simply. So it's basically to have skin in the game.
Okay.
Right. So, you know, so if they bring him in here and they say, you know, we'll pay you, 54 million rand in 3 years, it's not as much of incentive to say we're giving you X number of shares at a certain price and whatever they're worth. And as long as you meet certain requirements, you'll get those shares. So, you know, theoretically, you can make a lot more if you do a great job by the business.
Okay.
So it's a pretty standard practice used by companies.
Yeah.
But the devil is in the detail. You've got to see what the requirements are to get those shares. You know, sometimes the requirements aren't particularly demanding, and that does more of a disservice to the shareholders.
Okay. And is that a concern that also sometimes the focus moves away from actually focusing on the company and more watching the share price?
Yeah, that's 100% a concern. And you'll see that. So what you'll see in the remuneration reports of a lot of these companies, which is in the annual reports that they give out, is sometimes they'll give you more detail on the actual requirements. So sometimes you'll see, you know, things that should concern you, like linked to share price or, you know, growth in something that's not tied to actual long-term value creation.
Okay.
But if the incentives, you know, people operate according to incentives, if the incentives are correct in terms of growing the underlying value of the business, then that will naturally translate eventually into a share price realization.
Right. So it's a bigger picture. It's not just chasing the share price and saying, well, if I can get the share price to go up, then I'm going to yield this reward. Daniel, tell me, what do you think of him as a CEO coming with the background of Levi Strauss? We know that Woolworths have taken a bit of strain, and I know there's been some talk that I think investors in Australia, particularly around the David Jones side, are a little bit concerned. What are your thoughts on Woolworths in particular, and I guess Roy coming into this role?
So so let's do a little bit of background.
Yes.
So Woolworths was a brilliant food business with the average clothing offering.
Okay.
Then with the David Jones transaction, they became an average clothes business with a bit of a brilliant food offering.
Okay, interesting.
So I think the David Jones acquisition was a disaster. I mean, going into big store formats just at the time when online was blasting off exponentially. And that's been reflected by the change in management. I mean, it was a big mistake, and I think a change in management was 100% necessary off the back of that.
Right.
So Roy has done extremely well with where he was. I just don't know. So Woolworths clothing definitely needs attention.
Right.
But the powerhouse in Woolworths and what's holding up that business is the food business currently.
Okay.
And that's the real powerhouse.
Correct.
And I don't know how much food experience he has.
Okay.
So that would be a concern. Yeah.
So I guess the best suggestion we can give to our listeners is all those moms and dads out there, keep buying the food from Woolworths, putting it through the tills, and that should help Roy. So we probably indirectly contribute to Woolworths earnings. Daniel, you've been great. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to have to wrap this up. It's already 3 minutes to the hour of 1 o'clock. Guys, I hope you've had a awesome lunch break. I've had a good time here talking about lunch. I'm probably going to go prepare a bit of chicken soup and knedlach. The recipe is on Facebook. You can go and have a look at that. I'll also be posting some information around the coronavirus and some ideas around preparing for working remotely, or how we can stimulate our kids if they have to stay home. The time's just gone 2 minutes to 1 o'clock. I'll be back same place, same time next week.